KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you, Frampton's Camel. We appreciate you stopping by. It's a Wednesday. It's Sports Talk. We got things. By the way, a little bit of sad news. You know, we keep up with music and entertainment and movies. And Kirk Douglas, 103 years old, passed away today. This might sound strange. Aside from Spartacus, is there a movie that he is, really well known for? I mean, he did a TV movie as recently as 2008. He appeared in The Simpsons in the 90s. He did a movie called Greedy with Michael J. Fox, where he played Uncle Joe, a millionaire who really pulled the wool over people's eyes. I know this sounds strange, but I can't name a lot of Kirk Douglas movies. Obviously, I'm much more familiar with Michael Douglas, his son, who is one of my fave actors. The movie Spartacus came out in 1960. I mean, I was on his IMDb page. His first movie was 1946, just after World War II. I guess The Walls of Jericho was a pretty substantial movie. The Glass Menagerie. Somebody just texted The Tall Trees. I think it's The Big Trees, 1952. That's not bad. Lust for Life, he played Vincent van Gogh, which also happens to be the Iggy Pop song that is Jim Rome's theme song, Lust for Life. So, the passing of Kirk Douglas, 103 years old. I mean, you know you're old when your son's filmography dates to the 60s. You know, he made an appearance in the FBI, a show called, and by the way, you're my age if you're nodding your head at least, Medical Center, and then The Streets of San Francisco, where he played Inspector Steve Keller with a great theme song. No, not even sort of.
I think I've made two really...
A Quinn Martin production.
I've made two really good jokes within 2 minutes of the show starting, both of them off mic. Ah, I'm bad at this.
As many great movies as Michael Douglas made in the 80s, and certainly, would I be accurate in saying Gordon Gekko from Wall Street, Greed is good, but Jack Colton from Romancing the Stone with Kathleen Turner, and of course his role, you know, we were talking the other week about the HBO critically acclaimed series Chernobyl. Well, Way before Chernobyl, there was a movie called The China Syndrome about a near catastrophe in Southern California where Jane Fonda played the reporter and he played the cameraman with Wilford Brimley, who popped up recently because he looks like Andy Reid, and Jack Lemmon. I'll tell you what. If you've never seen that movie, it's fantastic. Fatal Attraction with Glenn Close. You know, when a bunny gets boiled, that's kind of scary.
Oh, God.
Never saw that movie?
No.
Fatal Attraction? Don't. Excuse me.
Cough button, dear. There you go. Oh, he's still coughing. I probably should have
thought that was
that was a big cough. Good.
That wasn't a cough.
Oh, boy.
That was a choke.
He's still going. Oh, jeez. No, I've not seen Fatal Attraction.
That was a Kyle Shanahan. I choked.
Oh, jeez.
The American President with Annette Bening was awesome, too.
What was that sound?
What?
When he said that I did a Kyle Shanahan, that was a choke, and then you coughed and you came back with a... Goodness.
He did that horrible remake of the In-Laws, a horrible make of Wall Street. And he is in a TV series, The Kominsky Method, with Alan Arkin, that is absolutely brilliant. All right. How the hell old is he, by the way? Michael Douglas was born in 1944, and his dad is still alive until, he just passed at 103. Unbelievable. All right, so we acknowledge the passing of Kirk Douglas, and we move along into the 5 o'clock hour of sports talk. In a few minutes, we'll hear the second part of the press session today with new Oregon offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead. The phone lines are open at 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
If you can make it.
Or you can hit us up via the text line 321-0824. Try us on Twitter at 953thescore. Or hit us up via my Twitter account at SportsTalk953. Nick is at Rick Nodgers. But with that thought in mind, let's move to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Fred. Fred, good afternoon. How's it going?
Last time I had that big of a choke, it was either a shot of Bacardi 151 or that new driver I was using off the Onewood at ECC. What one was it for you?
The Onewood. You don't get it here at... described it that some people refer to it as the driver.
Well, I refer it to as the stick that should never be brought out of the bag, as far as I'm concerned.
No, you don't use your driver?
No, I can't. I lose all the balls. It just doesn't belong in my bag anymore. It actually ended up in the river one day.
Oh, I would really like to watch that.
I didn't. It was a $300 later, but anyway, that's
nice.
Another story too. All right, man, I go. Bye.
Take it easy.
Let's get them more. You need them water.
The stories we could all tell about the top anger moment playing golf. Was it just leaving? I could describe, and remember, I played competitive golf for many years, and I saw guys once it was over, rather than shake hands and just leave, in a cart, just walk off, I'm gone, I get back to the bar, and this was in the days, I mean, I haven't played in a league or anything since the early 90s. I remember when I worked at ADP, my first full-time job, we were in a summer league in 1982. And it was big guy Ed, who he was one of those guys who unfortunately loved golf, thought he was way better than he was, and liked to bet. So now he's in for X amount of dollars, and we're playing match play, and it's about the 15th hole, and he's got to make a 35-foot bomb, and he's not even close. And he just leaves his putter on the ground and starts walking away. Where are you going? And you just see, as he's walking, he just gives the finger. And so we figure, like a normal person, he'll cool off by the time he gets to the 19th hole. By the time we get back to the bar, he'll be there. We get to the bar, no, know where he is. It's not a familiar course. Nobody knows who he is. So his partner puts his clubs in his car. I'll never forget. He had one of those old LTDs, Ford LTDs, which aside from a Lincoln and a Caddy, were just the biggest cars in the world, a four-door. And so I get home. I don't know where Ed is. Well, he's not home. He wasn't married. He was single, but he owned his own home. And he just showed up at work the next day. And Ed, what happened? I got back, had a couple of drinks. I was really pissed off. I was going to call a cab, but I realized, I mean, it would be like so much money, even back then. And he said, just coincidentally, a guy he used to know came to the bar and drove him home. He got changed and they went out. Just showed up at work the next day. If you've ever played Emerald Valley, they have weddings out there, and a buddy of mine is telling me a story where they're on, I think it's the 9th hole, where it's right at the place where they would hold a wedding. There's like a long bridge, and so apparently a guy hit a great approach shot and was about 2 feet away for a birdie, and you know, they're playing skins and they're playing for money, and he missed the 2-footer and let tear with an expletive guided, just again in every word, every combination, and all of a sudden they looked up and there was the wedding party like about 25 feet away on the little bridge getting pictures taken. And he was like, "You mother of a—" And they are losing their minds laughing. I was more about cursing than doing any sincere damage. Although I did once, this is about when I lived in Philly, about 1987. I was playing on Memorial Day, and I was playing so poorly, I said, I am not allowed to play for 30 days. And the one guy...
Because that'll make you better by not doing something.
No, I needed a away time. I had started playing at this point probably 20 years earlier, 22 years earlier. And I decided I'm on hiatus as of now. And the one guy, Jeff, was like, "But we got that tournament. I'm not playing. I haven't paid yet. Get another. I'm not playing." And I didn't. And I went. And all of a sudden, it was like 28 days. And the weekend came. I was like, "All right, I'm better now." I went out and I liked golf again. But I needed 30 days away. And I decided it was a course in Valley Forge on like the 16th hole. And it was just drive, hack, punch out, hack, take like an 8. And just like, if I don't finish, I think I made a moratorium. If I don't par one of the last holes, I'm banned for 30 days. And I didn't.
Wow.
So there you go. All right, 284-8571's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We're going to lock it up. But right now, as we said, for the first time, the local media got to chat up the new offensive coordinator, Joe Moorhead, 95.3, the score.
What's your relationship like with Coach Mastro? And are you still going to be running the pistol this season?
Pistol, that's it. I think that there's a tremendous group of experienced and talented coaches in that offensive staff room. Once I was hired, we kind of hit the ground running from a recruiting standpoint. So people ask, "How is Eugene?" I'm like, "I don't know. I'll tell you when I get back there." I'd been to here, the hotel, and the mall to get a haircut. So once recruiting ended, we actually started discussing football and having offensive staff meetings the past few days. And, I think there's a bunch of guys in there that are very smart, very experienced, and have a bunch of good ideas. So right now we're in the process of going through all the Oregon cutups from last year, seeing what we like, seeing what fits. Then we'll go through the Penn State and Mississippi State stuff and then try to, combine all those great ideas. And certainly Pistol was part of the discussion.
Steve Mims from the Register Guard. This may fall a little bit under that last question too, but in terms of talking with Mario, in terms of the collaboration process, I mean, how much do you figure the, you know, the head coach, the other coaches are in it. You're obviously the play caller. Just how does that work in terms of game planning and how much input you want people to give you as you put together the game plan?
Yeah, I think, you know, the process everywhere I've been as a coordinator or head coach acting as a coordinator has been, as you mentioned, collaborative, that you sit down on Sunday and Monday and you start piecing together first and second down, move on to third down and the red zone and goal line and things like that. So, you know, I want people to have, you know, ownership of their aspect of the game plan. So I want all the guys in there, you know, to play a part in it. And, you know, right now in terms of play calling and input and things like that on, you know, that's down the far, far end of the trough. Right now we're trying to figure out what we want to call formations and what we want to do in a run game and a pass game and protection. So, you know, we'll take care of that first. And as we progress more towards the season, we'll kind of figure out some of the, you know, who's up, who's down, play calling input and things like that.
To kind of encapsulate a little bit of late November and December for you, Joe, excuse me. If Elijah Moore doesn't do what he does, which prompts a move there, and you gave a very impassioned remarks after that game and the way that goes down. And it made a lot after that and in December when a lot of things were being said about you, you still took the time to reach out because you saw something in a newspaper in Starkville. Can you just speak to just your own mindset there over that month where you're giving very impassioned remarks about football, things are happening on a field, and yet you were still doing things in a community despite a lot of noise that was going on?
I think at the end of the day in this profession, it's what we do. It's not who we are. And you can't allow things that are occurring to you or your program, you know, to affect the fiber of your being. So, you know, although I, you know, believe we were having success, you know, certainly that's subjective and, you know, other opinions may have felt otherwise. But at the end of the day, you know, as you mentioned, there was, you know, some foster kids in the town who weren't going to have a Christmas. And, you know, my wife and I went to the store and bought them a bunch of gifts and brought them over. But at the end of the day, I think most great coaches or successful coaches are able to successfully kind of draw that line and distinction of, you know, football time and personal time and who you are. And my family and I were an incredibly rooted in the Starkville community. I mean, my boys went to the public school. My daughter went to Mississippi State. And, you know, we love the people there. And, you know, we just anything that we were able to do to be part of that community and have a positive influence, that meant a lot to us.
Eric Scopel, DuckTerritory.com.
Hello, Eric.
I guess just you obviously were head coach this last year recruiting around the country. I wonder how many players Oregon signed to this class you were familiar with and kind of what your assessment is of the talent that's incoming.
Well, DJ James flipped from Mississippi State to Oregon last year, so coach did a great job there. But you know, Trey Benson, a guy out of St. Joe's in the Delta, was a guy that we recruited pretty heavily. As you kind of go through the roster, I don't think we were necessarily as much nationally focused as Oregon is. You know, I won't say regional, but the state of Mississippi, kind of Louisiana and surrounding states. So, you know, have a familiarity with some of the guys on the roster, but maybe not to the extent of, you know, if this were a school maybe in the south or east of the Mississippi.
Hey, Brandon Kammerman, hey, Coach. Touching a little bit on what Eric just asked, Maru talks a lot about the national brand of Oregon, right, and they've recruited multiple players in the Southeast. Having been a coach in the Southeast, what is your perspective of a Pac-12 team? Because most Pac-12 teams don't have as strong a foothold in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi as Oregon does.
Yeah, and once again, I think it speaks to the branding, the visibility, the success of the program over the past few years, you know, with Coach Bilotti, Coach Kelly, and moving on to Coach Cristobal. And, you know, once again, can't understate the importance of the opportunity to work for a guy like Coach Cristobal and what he's built here in a very short amount of time, and not just the on-field success, but the culture, the mentality, you know, kind of bringing that mindset of toughness and physicality to Oregon. But certainly, you know, the name brand, the success, the school, the location allow you to go anywhere in the country and recruit the best and the brightest. And I think coach and the staff have done an unbelievable job with that.
What are your thoughts on Butterfield and Robbie Ashford being a guy that maybe was in your area?
Yeah, we offered Robbie, I think, as a maybe ninth or tenth grader. It was early. Had a chance to go home, visit him, and meet with he and his mom and kind of, you know, rekindle that relationship because we had a kid that was committed to us in Mississippi State. Knew a little bit about, you know, the Butterfield kid, but just getting to know those guys a little bit more. And certainly, you know, with Butterfield being a mid-year and then Robbie coming in, you know, they'll have a lot of learning to do, but I think they have a lot of talent.
Getting into your background, Joe, how much does being the son of a steel worker, fit in with philosophically just the what Mario brings of, you mentioned the blue collar and the toughness mentality, but that, I mean, when you spend so many hours in a room together during the interview process, I'm sure no area was left unturned. So just how much does a lot of like-minded thinking and approach and background also kind of make this a right fit?
And that was actually kind of part of it, that, you know, when you're looking for the guy that you want to work for and, you know, do you espouse the same values? And Coach Crispell is a guy that's incredibly family oriented, you know, wife and kids mean a lot to him. But, you know, kind of grew up in the same kind of household mentality that you're going to get what you work for, not what you wish for. And, you know, my dad was 35 years in a steel mill in Pittsburgh and had a second and third job as a bartender, as a janitor, whatever he needed to do. Not that my mom or dad went to college, but my brother and sister and I all did because of the hard work and, you know, dedication to, as most parents want to do, make sure that their children's lives are better than their own. So everything that I've learned about persistence, about work ethic, about toughness, you know, it really all comes from my mom and my dad and my family. And it's something I think you can never kind of overlook.
Has the quote book made the trip to Eugene, and where were the origins for that joke? Because I've heard legends of just how big this thing is. Where did that all start?
It's a probably 4-inch binder at this point. I don't know. I figured I had to do something to put my English degree to use. So collecting quotes is something that we started doing at Fordham and putting them up in team meetings. And I know Coach and Matt Neuer are, you know, you see them up on the, you know, kind of on the ticker and in staff meetings, but it's just something that we use from a motivational standpoint. And, you know, the kids have all grasped onto, and I'll have it available. I think it's probably in a box in my garage at Starkville now, but ultimately it'll make the trip out here. Appreciate it. Thank you guys. Go Ducks.
It's in a box in his office in Starkville. It's got to make its way out here. And there you are. You've been officially introduced to Joe Moorhead, the offensive coordinator of the Ducks, the reigning Rose Bowl champions, reigning Northern Division and Pac-12 champions. All right, before we move away, shout out to our friends at Big Al State Farm on Cal Young next to Dairy Mart. If you're not doing enough to protect your family, well, talk to Big Al State Farm. They want to take an in-depth look at your insurance needs and make sure you're protected from the consequences that can occur when you don't have the right coverage. You can stop by their office on Cal Young in Eugene next to Dairy Mart, or you can call 686-1522. Try the website, BigAlEugene.com. And let's call it the return of the trivia contest. So I'll ask you a trivia question, and you'll text me the correct answer, 321-0824, or you'll text me an answer. And the first one will win a $10 prepaid gift card from Big Al. So I was looking at the all-time scoring list in NBA history, and I noticed there was only one left-hander who has scored more than 20,000 points. I want to know, who is the all-time leading lefty scorer in NBA history? I'll give you a hint. Think about it. Don't overthink it. 321-0824. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll have that. We'll have a Coors Light update. And we'll have more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
LeBron pulls up, gets it to Rondo, back to LeBron.
There it is.
Why not? Another three. Good again! And a foul! LeBron with a four-point play opportunity. Timeout, San Antonio. Wow! The King doing it long!
Yeah, what a run. LeBron James, 36 points, 9 assists, 7 boards, 6 from downtown, as the Lollickers just wrecked San Antonio 129-102 last night. LeBron hit 5 threes over a 3-minute span and just lit up Staples as we welcome you back to Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. So I was asking who the all-time leading scorer in the NBA is. For a lefty, only two of you even listed a lefty. Bill Russell and Manu Ginobili, Jason Kidd, Jerry West, Pete Maravich, Larry Bird, really? Anyway, nobody got the answer. It's not James Harden. It's not an active player. You could still text the correct answer, 3210824. I'll give you a hint because I need this over for our friends at Big Al State Farm on Cal Young next to Dairy Mart. As far as we know, he's both an officer and a gentleman. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
I came up with a pun that's an even bigger hint if you really want to just get it over with.
Let's see if somebody could actually pull the trigger and get it right, because if you can't get it there.
Right. I'm ready for the pun, so when you want it, I'll unload it.
All right, you keep it there.
Okay,
all right. The other thing was during Crunch Exchange today. This is definitely the first time we've had an answer on the same day.
Yes, certainly within the same show. This is pretty impressive.
So the Crunch Exchange question was, it had to deal with Andre Iguodala, who we talked about earlier than we talked about with Steve Mims, with what Dylan Brooks said to him. And the question was, would he be traded by tomorrow's trade deadline? Safe to say the answer is yes, because he's already gone.
He has been traded from Memphis to Miami. This is from at Sham Sharina and Woj ESPN on Twitter. Memphis has agreed to a deal to send Andre Iguodala to Miami. Iguodala has agreed to the trade and agreed to a two-year, $30 million extension with the Heat.
Really?
Boom, right off the bat. Well, I think he was offloaded this year to the Grizzlies because he was an expiring contract. I think at $12 million, whatever it was he was making, he obviously thought he still had more to play with. I don't know why it took him until the trade deadline to talk to Memphis to be like, hey, if you're not going to play me, can I go? Can I go play basketball then?
And the other thing, like we were talking about, was he was getting paid, and it's like, I really, that my original dream job was like center fielder for the Yankees, right winger for the Islanders, quarterback for the Giants. My new dream job is to get paid for doing nothing.
Right.
I mean, who's kidding who?
No, like I was talking about during What Are You Doing, the Tommaso Berni guy has not played a single minute of professional soccer since 2013, and he keeps signing one-year deals to stay as a second or third string goalie for Inter Milan.
So jealous.
That's the ideal job. You get to live in Italy, kind of play a little bit of soccer. You're playing a position in soccer. You don't even have to run a lot. You just kind of have to worry that you're not going to break your fingers so badly that you then can't play, but you're already not playing. That, oh, it's perfect. And you're living in Italy. I think I led with that. But you live in Italy and you're paid to do nothing.
By the way, the answer is David Robinson, the admiral, an officer, and a gentleman. Love, lift us up where we belong. All right, let's move along. So the other trade that they were discussing in the NBA, the Rockets get Robert Covington in what they're calling the biggest by volume trade in about 19 years in the association. And for whatever it's worth, he began his career with Houston, then stops in Philly, the past 2 years in Minnesota. He played 4 years at Tennessee State for some teams. He was undrafted. He got his opportunity, but, you know, he moved through the ranks quickly. He played a year with the D League, landed with the Sixers when they were in their trust the process days. And then by the end of 2018, he was already first team All-NBA defense with the Stifle Tower, Rudy Gobert, AD, Vic Oladipo, and Jrue Holiday. And the guy's a testament to stick-to-itiveness and hard work. I mean, he's now a pretty darn valuable frontline player. And, you know, they dealt Clint Capella, who's also a legit frontliner. But he unfortunately lands in NBA purgatory with the Stinking Hawks. But he's not playing anyway. He just underwent thumb surgery about 2 weeks ago and is expected out at least another 3 weeks. He was having a heck of a year, by the way. 14 points, 14 rebounds. And, you know, they're two completely different players with Capella at 6'10". Covington, while he plays some power forward, he's only listed at 6'7", 215. But I tell you, the Rockets have no size. I mean, they do in Tyson Chandler. He's just a deep bench guy. He's only played three games this month. And the other center is Isaiah Hartenstein, who's the son of the former Duck Flo, who, you know, born here in Eugene, was the second-round pick of the Rockets back in the 2017 draft, played mostly for the Rio Grande Pipers in the G League, and again, primarily been an end-to-bench guy, so that's an interesting move for Houston because they've got no rim protector unless they plan on either Chandler or Hartenstein expanding their role or having more minutes coming. I don't know. It seems like a move that would inspire a move, but it's the only move that they made. As for last night, you know, we were talking about the Blazer fans maybe getting a tad carried away or a little overly bent out of shape because Lillard didn't win player of the month, like it's going to alter their current status. And I mentioned that, you know, one of the reasons he's not in the NBA MVP conversation is because as great as he is, as easy as he is to like, as he is much a face of a franchise player as exists in the league right now, just seems like the coolest dude around, plays his ass off, everybody loves him, high character guy. He's, you know, he's a scorer. He plays really, really hard. He, like the team, is just bad on defense. And, you know, they played at Denver last night, and it was a perfect storm of They were down 64-38 at halftime. I mean, Portland, which, if nothing, they have some firepower, had 10 points in the second quarter. And they just got blown out. They shot right around 40%, little brick-a-thon. I mean, Lillard, who'd been making threes and fallen into the freaking unconscious category, was just one of three. At the other end, Denver was having a huge, huge night. Jokic, by the way, came really close to having one of those monsters. Triple doubles with 29 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists. By the way, three blocks as well. But yeah, it was a little too much he and Jamal Murray. I mean, four of their starting five had 16 or more. And I think the bench certainly, well, it didn't matter. It was a freaking blowout, 127-99. So now, with a few more games left, the All-Star break as of a week from tonight is underway. So you got that going for you, which is nice. As far as which is on tap for this evening, yeah, the one thing I always love this time of year is when you know, you just grab the paper and you see Big East, ACC, Big 12, more Big East than ACC on tonight, just on basic cable. And Orlando at Boston, the ESPN game, back into the doubleheader, which should actually be a really good ball game. The Heat at the Clippers. That's the back end of the ESPN doubleheader. And so even without NBA TV or various sports packages, a lot of good action on the hardwood this evening if you're, you know, like me right now. And I'm kind of in a full-on basketball mode because with football season, you know, laid to rest, I'll even allow that football season could last until the last degenerate chugs his last can of beer and goes home after the parade. It's now officially basketball season. You had the two beauties arrested after a car chase on the Chiefs parade route. The morons started the idiocy at 8:12 local time. The car broke through a parade barrier, and they dumped the drop sticks. I like the fact that they ran over it, and it's like, not only were they drunk, so was the car. It just didn't even feel it. And they kept going down the parade route. And if you see the local video, the local footage, so the police made contact with the car, spun it around, wedged it in with a police cruiser. Then, of course, their idiots are surrounded by all the cops with their guns drawn. Oh, like, this ride is over.
Classic pit maneuver. Just the officer comes in, you got to get inside, you hit that back wheel, you drive into it, spin the car around, drove it perfectly into a curb, second car comes flying in, and just a head-to-head collision, wa-boom, and then they all, I think very quickly when they realized, like, I saw all the cops swarmed in with their guns drawn, and then they kind of very quickly realized that this probably wasn't going to be a violent sort of situation, and it was just a couple of drunks, and they had one car back off, and then all of like the steam from the radiator or some yep. sort of smoke was just billowing out from under the hood, and I was just like, that's just gonna make this whole situation a whole lot worse. Like, you had him done when he was in the pit maneuver and driven into the curb. Like, the second and third car coming in at the end there, it was a little overdone it.
No, and like I said, once you realize nobody got hurt, you can actually laugh about it. And although, I guess by the time they wake up and the hangover goes away and they have breakfast, they're going to be like, Freddie, what the hell were we thinking? And like I said, I didn't see... I'm more curious about who they are, their age. First of all, perfect tool shed nominees for Friday. But I have a vision of somebody about my age. I don't think it was. I sense this is the stupidity of youth who just decided, you know what? The last time the Chiefs won, by gum, I was 9. Now I'm almost 60. I'm going to do something memorable. It's going to be really stupid, but it's going to be memorable. It's going to be like the end of Animal House. This calls for something really fruitless and stupid be done on someone's behalf, and we're just the guys to do it. All right, that brings us to a break time. We'll do just that. I guess not.
Well, I have an update. The two people in the vehicle were taken into custody. The passenger was detained for investigation, but not booked in jail and will not face charges. The police were going to hold a briefing, or will hold a briefing, tomorrow morning regarding the chase and potential charges. So we're going to learn a lot about this guy, about what was going on.
I think we could cut to the scene from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid where the guy goes, morons. I have morons on my team would be very appropriate. All right, let's wrap it now. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll have the tweet of the day and wrap up sports talk on a Wednesday next. 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Hi, host Steve. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frost Brewing Sports Desk for the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. I'm going to stall by telling you that you can find our podcast on iTunes and Spotify. We have all 3 hours of the show posted there daily. If you miss any of the show, just give us a search. Cumulus Eugene, you should be able to find us. And subscribe, rate, review, do all the 5-star things. And you can keep getting all of this content and so much more. Tweets of the day. What do we have here? Mina Kimes made a very good pun. The Toronto Raptors posted a picture of... I don't know who the name of the player. He's wearing the second largest scarf I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, what the hell?
It is, you're probably able to realize, basketball players are very tall people. This is a scarf that looks like it is too big for a basketball player, so you can imagine what it would be like on a normal person. But Mina Kimes, with her pun, tweeted, "The Toronto Raptors," spelling it W-R-A-P-T-O-R-S. That's a very good pun. Yahoo Sports followed it up with Lenny Kravitz, who was a visionary. That was the first thing I thought of when I saw the picture of the giant scarf. Was Lenny Kravitz in his giant scarf? And I'm showing the picture to Steve. It's the world's biggest scarf. That is the biggest scarf I've ever seen, is the one that Lenny Kravitz wore. So the second one is being worn by whoever the Raptors player is wearing his scarf. I think about that picture probably more often than I should.
I'm really a little disturbed about that.
It's life-shattering once you realize, or life-altering once you realize there are scarves that are that big.
Who knitted that?
Somebody's grandmother or somebody's aunt was knitting this scarf for a month and a half, and then Lenny Kravitz probably bought it for like $800,000.
I think that somebody started knitting it for their child when they were in their 20s and ended up giving it to their grandchildren in their 70s.
It's a blanket. It's a blanket that he somehow spun into his... It's incredible. It's all very incredible. But our refreshing tweet of the day from at Jeff Schwartz on Twitter. They had a little overlay of the Royals World Series parade, or side-by-side, I should say, of the Chiefs fans showing up for the parade and then Royals fans at the parade. And oh my goodness, there's so much blue when the Royals won the World Series. It's incredible. And the original tweet says, "Weather plays a huge factor, but I must say, I didn't expect the Royals parade to dwarf the Chiefs turnout." And at Jeff Schwartz tweeted, "Maybe they showed up in Kansas instead." So thanks to at Jeff Schwartz for the refreshing tweet of the day. Follow the station on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at 953thescore. If you find us on Instagram or Facebook, you'll be able to see Luden, who was our pet of the week. He did a number one and a number two in our studio, and he's looking to be the number one in your heart. So go and adopt him, green-hill.org, for more information. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk953. Do not be a jerk. Just do it.
All righty, and down the stretch they come.
Whoa.
If you'd like to sneak a quick one in, you could still hit us up at 284-8571. That's your Oregon fuel injection hotline. What'd you come up with?
From at WojESPN, another Woj bomb, Justice Winslow is a part of the package headed to Memphis in the Iguodala trade. Sources tell ESPN.
Iggy. He's in that rare column of NBA Finals MVPs who aren't in the Hall of Fame or not going to be in the Hall of Fame. It's we talked about this before, and unlike baseball, where it's actually kind of a small percentage, because you know, honestly, I don't know why it is. I guess a seven-game series, it's baseball, where at the NBA, it's kind of, you know, you really only have, you're only dipping into a pool of, what, one of six guys that could really win it. I mean, you look at the original MVP of the finals, from Jerry West to Willis Reed to Kareem, Wilt, John Havlicek, Rick Barry, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame. Even JoJo White got elected to the Hall of Fame, as did Big Red, Bill Walton, Dennis Johnson, Magic. So from the first one through, I'll tell you what, Dwayne Wade's going to the Hall of Fame. We don't have a problem with that. Duncan obviously is a lock. Tony Parker going to end up in the Hall of Fame. You feel pretty confident there. Dirk, yeah. Kawhi, you know, Iguodala is like one of three guys. Chauncey Billups the other, where you could be like, of every single solitary NBA Finals MVP, who's probably not going to go in the Hall of Fame. I mean, Durant's in, LeBron's in, Kawhi, Dirk, Kobe, Paul Pierce, Tony Parker. And yeah, somebody texted, it's the irony that the first NBA Finals MVP was given to Jerry West in a losing effort. Now, one of the things I want to talk with Fentress about when we have him on from The Athletic tomorrow is it seems the parameters for MVPs in football, sure, it's like, are you the best quarterback? You're probably going to win MVP regardless, because do you know anybody who would make a big fuss if they found out the Chiefs running back, Damian Williams, had actually won the MVP?
Like, everybody would have been like, yeah, that's okay. That
okay, good.
Sense. He had a really good game. If the Niners came back and won and, like, Deebo Samuel caught either a big catch or the game-winning touchdown, he should have been MVP, and they'd have given it to Garoppolo anyways, because probably somebody would have been making the argument, wide receiver can't catch the ball without the quarterback passing it, and if the quarterback's got to pass it, that makes him much more valuable to the team, and he's the most valuable player. Get out of here.
It's a disturbing analysis that I don't necessarily agree with. All right. So looking ahead to tomorrow, what did I have up my sleeve? I said we've got, Mike Parker, voice of the Beavs. Going to talk a little uncivil war as we get ready for, 7:30 Friday. You know, it's been kind of a quiet week. I feel like there's been so much action. And then, of course, we had the bonus of this Monday, the U of O women going in and laying down in an historic whooping on UConn in stores. And then the Oregon men, as rivalry week cycled to the Civil War, they're not playing until Saturday, but got a whole host of activity on the Pac-12 hardwood on the morrow. I was going to try and dial it up on my computer, then I realized, oh, that's right, I got the Pac-12 standings. So what are the good games tomorrow? USC at Arizona. Oh, yeah, that's a good game. Stanford at Utah is a good one. UCLA, amazing, with 10 losses already. I mean, they're in the hunt for a bye in the conference tournament, but they've pretty much eliminated themselves from any at-large possibility. But going to Arizona State, you know, they can get a win and, I guess, root for USC, which is a rarity to beat Arizona, and proper positioning. So that about does it, folks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging. Thanks to Steve Mims for his time. Have yourselves a great Wednesday. And thanks for listening to Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.
He goes!